Welcome to Gal Pals Watch. I'm Alicia.
And I'm Sarah.
And this is the second time we're recording this. And this is a podcast.
In case you second, didn't know.
The second episode of a podcast. No. This is a podcast where we discuss queer lady-ish films inclusively defined.
Yep.
Yeah. And today we had the pleasure of watching an awesome documentary called My Name is Pauli Murray.
Yep. And I forgot what year it was made, but definitely before Ruth Bader Ginsburg died.
Yes. I noticed that too, because I was like, oh, there's actual footage of Ruth Bader Ginsburg right now.
Mm-hmm. Interview footage.
What'd you
They interviewed her.
Oh, yes. Interview footage. Yeah. Not just... Yes. It was in 2021.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. And the director is Julie Cohen and Betsy West. Mm-hmm. I feel like it's really rare to have a two director combo.
Yeah.
Yeah. And essentially, I'd like to read the summary if that's okay.
Yes, I feel like please do.
It is a great one.
Okay.
And it reads, overlooked by history, Pauli Murray was a legal trailblazer whose ideas influenced RBG's fight for gender equality and Thurgood Marshall's civil rights arguments. This is a portrait of their impact as a non-binary Black luminary, lawyer, activist, poet, and priest who transformed the world.
That is very accurate, I would say.
Our world, excuse me, I read that wrong.
Yes.
But yeah, I was saying before my other computer died, that I feel like Pauli Murray is someone I should have learned more about in school, because I did learn about, you know, stuff that, you know, Thurgood Marshall waited on and RBG waited on. And it's just, it's one of those things where they have even cited Pauli Murray's like writings and logic into their own work. So it seems like crazy to me that I didn't learn about this person.
Yeah, it is, I would say, terrible, but not really surprising given how like rigged the education system is against like broad education. There's a very specific narrative, especially in history, that the system wants us to know, and that's it. And they're not very interested in broadening beyond that. But Pauli Murray was such a cool human being.
Yeah, I feel like this documentary encompassed a lot of like the many hats that they wore. In an like interesting way, because in a way it was like a little too fast. It was just a little bit like too short in some ways.
Yeah,
because I wanted to know. Mm-hmm. Can you repeat that?
I was just gonna say they did so much that it did sort of feel like, oh, they were doing this and then they were doing this and they were writing this and they were with this person and they were suddenly best friends with Eleanor Roosevelt. But like, I think that also speaks to their life. Like, you can do a lot in a life. They did maybe more than the average person.
I think so. Yeah, for sure. I'm like, I left the movie feeling like inspired, like, yeah, that's the kind of life I want to lead. Like, I want to have a full life. And I feel like Pauli Murray definitely had a full life.
Even though they died not that old of an age.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah. The year I was born.
Really?
Yeah. 1985. That's how old I am.
Yeah, that's true. And yeah, I feel like I can only imagine what they would have done had they not died at, you know, such a young age.
Yeah, it's not unlike Lorraine Hansberry, who we also watched a documentary on. Yeah. She died a lot younger. I think she was only in her 30s when she died. Lorraine Hansberry.
I I wouldn't know. I don't remember.
Yeah.
I'd have to fact check that.
I'm pretty sure she died very young, but
yes.
Yeah. Also managed to make waves in a really good way.
Yeah, absolutely. I was saying before, in our previous conversation, how I liked how the documentary had like good B-roll footage. Cause I feel like a lot of the time, like B-roll footage is like often overused, or like reused in cases where they don't have a lot of actual footage. But thankfully this documentary benefited from the fact that, Pauli Murray like really documented their life like crazy well.
Yeah. They documented their own life through like writing. And also there was a lot of footage of them, video and audio footage, that I'm not sure if all of it was like them kind of initiating it, or it seemed like they were being interviewed by somebody else a lot of the time.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it was a mix of things.
Yeah. Aside from the autobiography,
mm-hmm.
which I have to read now. Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
Which I thought was really interesting, because I wonder how common it is for someone to also narrate.
Oh, yes. That's right. They were narrating the autobiography.
That was such a good touch. Like,
yeah.
I'm really glad Pauli Murray did that. And
me too.
That they, you know, donated all their writings and all their, mm-hmm. you know, life's work, essentially. I'm going to say it wrong, but to the Schlesinger Library.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not exactly sure how to say it, but it's a library at Harvard University.
Yeah.
There's
a part in the beginning where it was Pauli Murray's grandniece or something,
yeah,
who said, oh. And this is another thing, in the movie they use she, her pronouns basically all the time. The only people who don't use her pronouns are some of the trans activists who they interview.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'm just going to use they, them pronouns, but
mm-hmm.
the grandniece used she, her pronouns. And so she was like, oh, she called me in the middle of the night. She said, I'm not going to make it through the night. I think they had cancer.
Right? Yes.
Yeah. And said, I want to donate all of my writings, like everything in the house, to this place. And this grandniece like went over there, and there was so much material. And that was the first time even she had learned about Pauli Murray's like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So yeah, Pauli Murray had pancreatic cancer. Yeah, and to the point where she was like, they were racing to finish their autobiography.
Mm-hmm. Maybe that's why they were narrating.
Mm-hmm.
That might have had something to do with it.
Yeah, I was unclear as to when the autobiography started.
Yeah, me too.
But we know that by the end of their life, it was. They were trying to finish it as soon mm-hmm. as possible.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's so impressive too that they were like with it mentally the whole way, enough to know that like, I know I'm going to die. Mm-hmm. I only have a few hours to live.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, they needed to tell a family member to like mm-hmm. check on all their stuff.
I know, it's pretty wild that they just like knew that. I think. Yeah. I mean, one of the things that they do talk about in the movie to, I would say like a medium extent, is Pauli's mental illness and mm-hmm. Like gender dysphoria and struggles with sexuality and gender. And I think a lot of that is because there just wasn't a lot of language for it in this place at this time. But they wrote to doctors. I feel like they were very in tune with their own body.
Absolutely.
Even though it was confusing for them.
Mm-hmm.
So like that came across in all the things that they were writing to these doctors, like asking for help, because in some ways I felt like they really didn't fit into these categories. And it seemed like that was a source of a lot of like depression and anxiety. And yet here they are like also truly advocating for really radical things, like some things that would even be considered radical today.
Mm-hmm.
And this was in like 30s and 40s and 50s. And
yeah. And yeah. It's especially surprising and I guess, you know, in a way that makes me like feel proud. You know, they're so courageous. Because they're writing to these doctors, literally, you know, saying words like, wouldn't it, it's curious, you know, to appear to be a woman, but was really a boy, you know, something like that. And like openly admitting to these doctors, like, hey, I don't quite feel like a woman, and like begging for, you know, hormone therapies, right, or, you know, anything to help, in a time where you could just get locked up forever.
Yeah, that's so true.
So, and I don't quite know if there was, you know, something to do with race as to why she wasn't, or why they weren't institutionalized immediately. Like other queer women of the time, or, you know,
It hurt, or their family's racial makeup was also interesting because they were definitely mixed race. There was a lot of different people that sort of came together in that family. It seemed like I kind of wish they had dug into that more. There was indigenous heritage, white heritage, black heritage. And yeah, I guess that wasn't really the point of the movie. Like the point was to showcase what Polly did, which was really a lot.
Yeah, but it is true, you know, they're from like an Irish ethnicity, indigenous ethnicity, in particular Cherokee, but also black. But I guess the family in general was more white passing, which they did touch on a little bit, but it is one of those things where I'm sure their experience, and like being able to go to law school eventually, and being able to move up in the way that they did, again, eventually, I want to have that stipulation where it still took an extremely long time.
Yeah. And it was never going to be the same kind of access that a white man had. One of the things that they did a lot in the movie was they showed photos of like the graduating class of, because Polly applied to Harvard Law School and didn't get in because of their gender, probably also their race, but they focused on the gender when they were talking about it. And then they showed these photos of all these, you know, higher education people. And it's just like a sea of white men. And yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, a lot of universities, you know, tried to blame it on the law and said like the law does not allow for your admittance into this school, things like that, which is just absolutely bananas.
It was really not that long ago. That's another thing I kept thinking while I was watching this, is that in a way some of this feels like it took place so long ago and so much has changed, but I think especially in the last several years when the Supreme Court and a lot of courts in this country have been stacked with conservative people, and it really feels like we're going back to the kind of mentality that allowed for such extreme oppression and segregation. It kind of makes you realize like, oh, this really was not long ago. Like it was one person's lifetime ago.
Yeah.
And yeah. And I think it's easy, especially as white people who aren't actively targeted by a lot of the things that Polly experienced. It's easy to get complacent and sort of take some things for granted mm-hmm. that really are not granted.
Yeah, I think that like the historical context, they did a good job explaining the historical context of like what was going on in these pivotal points mm-hmm. in Polly's life. Like one of the first ones was so Polly Murray is born in 1910, and that's the same year Dr. Odom, I guess, wrote this book or a study essentially saying that white people should not expect intelligence and, you know, much basically from Black people. Yeah. And it's like that's literally the year they were born.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's like, yeah, putting a lot of this stuff into context. And as you had mentioned before in our previous conversation, like it puts an understanding to how early these civil rights events were starting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's true. In our first attempt at recording this, I was talking about how in my education, public school education on the East Coast of the United States in the 90s, the civil rights movement was basically confined to the 60s in our history class.
Yeah.
And Polly Murray and obviously a lot of other people were working really hard on this in the 30s, in the mm-hmm. 40s, and before that. So that was something that I hadn't really actively thought about in a while. And I was watching this and I thought that that Polly had been born actually later and was working later in the civil rights movement, which they also were working up until they died basically in the 80s. But
but at that time they were like middle-aged, and it's right. like,
yeah,
you know, it's not some like young, hopeful, you know, it's a more like person who's been around and, you know, set up the building blocks and the foundation. But yeah, I think the way in which we are taught history is just like, here's this one piece to the puzzle and it's isolated.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, and it's hard to view it as a whole thing that's integrated.
Yeah. And that's why I like what you said about context, because I think you're right. This movie does a good job of putting things in context.
Mm-hmm.
And especially with Polly's work, like they ended up going to law school at Howard University, and they were the only woman, quote unquote woman, in their class, and just wrote all these things that like became really integrated into modern modern ideas of what justice is and what the law is and mm-hmm. what the law means for people.
Yeah. I think one of the pieces that struck me the most was how they're talking about separate but equal is delusional, and they bring in the more like psychological and like the traumatic part of it instead of just like, you know, these people are getting, you know, white people are getting more funding, for example, than
right.
Black communities.
Yeah, it's made like, it more human.
This is more than just a money thing.
Mm-hmm.
This is more than just resources. This is something that will impact generations to come,
mm-hmm.
Which I thought was just like, it's huge. I feel like that is revolutionary. And as you said earlier, still revolutionary.
Yeah.
To recognize that like these are not just isolated incidents. It's not as though when we flip the switch and things change that it will get better.
Yeah.
There's more work to do
mm-hmm.
After that initial change.
Yeah. So true. And it was really cool how they were like, I was really, some of the things in this documentary surprised me, like how they became friends with Eleanor Roosevelt.
Oh yeah. That was like,
what?
So bizarre. Yeah. I was just like, what is happening?
Yeah. and then like also were really instrumental. I think they were actually a co-founder of NOW, the National Organization of Women. They served on the board of the ACLU. They wrote all these legal things that I don't know if they were legal opinions because they weren't a judge. They were just a lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But like a lot of judges, including Ruth Bader Ginsburg, like straight up cited Pauli Murray in their decisions.
Mm-hmm.
I just think it's so, and they were so charismatic. Like when you look at the video footage of them, I was saying this in our previous recording, but I was watching with my girlfriend and I was like, man, that smile is just amazing. And she goes, yeah, that's one sexy they, them.
Oh my God. Especially when they are in their like late teens, early 20s.
Uh-huh.
And they are like hitchhiking and riding the train.
Yeah, they did that too.
During the Great Depression. I was like, what a life. What a person. Yeah. And like, it was just so cute and how, you know, they had this like alter ego almost as a way to like, you know, I think now in today's context, we would, you know, categorize it as a kind of gender euphoria.
Yeah.
in boys' clothes and doing boy activities, like traveling around the country looking for work on a train.
Yeah.
And I think
they sort of touched on it a little bit about them like sort of passing as a boy for a little while when they were younger. And also like they were raised by their aunt or their great aunt.
There are two aunts. One was Aunt Pauline.
That's right.
Who called Pauli their boy girl.
Oh yeah. And said, like, did enforce the sort of gendered clothing, like had to wear a dress to church on Sundays, but the rest of the time was like, you can do whatever you want.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think for the time was probably, you know, as good as you could expect from, it seemed like, it seemed like they had a good relationship and that they were given, like Pauli was given room, even if not all the room, some room to just be themselves and explore the way they wanted to.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I think later on one of her or their family members says that Aunt Pauline said that, you know, they were more, or she was more accepting of Pauli, and would constantly like accept them for who they were.
Mm-hmm.
No matter what they brought to the table necessarily.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. One of the things we were talking about with, Harvard, one of the schools that they applied to is UNC Chapel Hill, for grad school. And that was when they were denied because the Constitution does not allow for me to admit you because of your race, one of your race. And that was just bananas.
Yeah.
And again, thinking of that like cultural historical timeline, they went to Howard in 1941. Wow. That's like so long ago to me.
Yeah. Yeah. I wonder how many women were going to Howard at that point.
I don't know. At one point they do say, like they give like a ratio, but I can't find it in my notes right now. But I did write down that, I think a family member says, she wasn't allowed to speak. No professor would call.
That's right. Yeah. I remember them narrating that.
And they say no professor would call on them. And it wasn't until, I think until their second year, basically, because back then they would post grades like publicly for everyone to see. And Pauli was at the top of the class. And then people were like, oh, right. Females can be smart.
Yeah. Oh my God.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Also had a lot of romantic relationships with women. And I like the balance in this movie of like, they did talk about that, but most of what they were talking about was their contribution to society, basically.
Yeah.
So it wasn't too fixated on their romantic life, but I did really like, I found it so endearing. Those letters between their, I think a girlfriend they had like later in life who they just said they were friends, but they would write these letters to each other, and these letters exist still, and they had like excerpts from them in the movie.
Yeah.
And then Polly would sign them 007, but like make the little like glasses for the two zeros were like a pair of glasses and then like a little set. I thought that was so sweet.
Yeah, they had so many fun and like playful ways to end letters, and
yeah, and they even addressed
what they would call the each letters. Other.
Yeah, exactly.
Like Linus and Charlie. Uh-huh. And,
yeah,
you know, stuff like that. I thought it was quite sweet.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that person's name was Reenie.
Reenie.
Right. And I think they met at work. Like the first day they ended up going to lunch together when they were both litigators, I believe. And then they went to church together at some point when they both realized that they were Episcopalian.
Yeah. And that's another thing is that go ahead.
Oh no, you go ahead.
Well, I was just gonna say that later in life Polly became an Episcopalian priest.
Mm-hmm.
And got, I would say, some pushback from her family and friends.
Yeah, they were like, what?
Yeah.
Like, it seemed so out of the blue for them.
Yeah.
But I kind of get it. Like, as you're getting, okay, I stole this from my wife. By the way, listeners, I got married over the hiatus.
Happy wedding. It was a beautiful wedding.
Sarah was there. I will post pictures. There's one really great one of us that I like, where I look like a boss.
You look like a boss the whole time. Both you and her. It was beautiful. It was perfect. Your kids also looked great.
Oh, thank you.
They're so cute.
My precious angles.
Uh-huh.
But basically my wife, she's also Episcopalian, weirdly enough, that this is, they're like the Catholic light version, and they're like gay people.
They're definitely like the least harmful of the Christians, I feel like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But she was essentially saying, you know, and Aaron, I know you're going to listen. I'm sorry. Like everyone does. Not that I think you're embarrassed by it, but it makes sense to me. She was basically saying, as you get older and you get closer to like meeting, going to the end of your life, you get more existential. So I think
that makes sense.
So, and like, where are you gonna go? What are you gonna do? And like having that sense of safety and that sense of security in believing in something helps. And although Polly doesn't necessarily fit in that scenario, it seems like she was, or they were consistently, you know, religious throughout their life. Becoming a priest was the next step in that journey. True.
Yeah, they grew up religious, and I think, as much as I really, 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 really hate religion, sorry about it, I don't like it at all.
It's okay. I think a lot of queer people do have hang-ups and justifiable reasons. Yeah. So.
And as much as I really cringe at religion in general, I do think that it's important to recognize that there's room for spirituality in like in radical thinking. Like it doesn't, and radical political thinking, it doesn't have to be mutually exclusive. And I think sometimes it's framed that way.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, it absolutely doesn't need to be. I think in fact, in order to like be a part of a religion that cares, you know, supposedly cares about other people and mm-hmm. other people's well-being. Like, you need to be radical, you need to be political. You can't just let it slide. You can't just rely on this ancient book.
Yeah.
It's you true. Need to be able to apply it to the modern context.
Mm-hmm.
Which
is not something the right is doing. I won't go there any further, but I'm just saying. Total opposite.
Yeah. Anyways. And I think, like, it is something that thankfully when I do go to church with my wife, it is something that, you know, they talk about now. It's like the current context and like,
yeah,
why should we give a shit? Yeah. What does this teach us? What can we do? Do we agree with it or not?
Mm-hmm.
And that's something it's really good. And I think, well, I don't know that for a fact that Pauli Murray would be that kind of priest, but I think just by the fact of their presence,
uh-huh,
you know, I feel yeah. like that would inspire.
Yeah. Yeah, I wish both about Pauli Murray and Lorraine Hansberry, who we also watched the documentary on, that I knew these people.
Yeah.
Or that I was alive in the same time as them. Not that I like want to be alive in the past, but just that, like, I don't know, that they were still around, you know?
Yeah, they are fascinating people.
Yeah. And so cool. And so, yeah, I don't want to say inspiring because it sounds kind of like cheesy, but it's true.
It's okay to be cheesy.
Yeah.
It is true. Like, yeah, I feel like from this, I almost said book, from
this. I said that earlier.
I did?
No, I did.
Oh. From this documentary, yeah, I feel like inspired to live a fuller life. Because Pauli just did so much.
Yeah, and I think it's a really good reminder that because a lot of what they faced was really hard and really dehumanizing, but mm-hmm. at the same time, they led this really beautiful life that also had joy and like community and a lot of like a lot of impact, like positive impact. Yeah. I think they had so much positive impact on probably the people around them in their immediate circle and like definitely this country, even though this yeah. country is fucked. Like, they had so much positive impact.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think of like, we touched upon it a little bit, but their relationship and friendship with Eleanor Roosevelt.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting because it first started out as kind of, you know, an aggressive.
Or like antagonistic. Like, it wasn't, they weren't like friends at first.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Antagonistic. That's a good word for it. Where, but also like just being a, you know, informed and, you know, involved citizen mm-hmm. in America, writing to your, you know, the people who are leading the country saying yeah. this is completely inappropriate. Why are you treating Black people this way? But she didn't, or they didn't use the word Black.
Mm-hmm.
They used another word, which I'm not going to say. So I just yeah. don't feel comfortable saying it.
Yeah.
But Eleanor Roosevelt like writes back this yeah. like total like backhanded slap in the face comment of like, the things in America are getting better, but don't push it too far.
Yeah, basically like, you should be grateful anything's getting better at all, kind of.
Exactly. Vibe. And Pauli still had, you know, the grace. Not that you should do this. Right. You don't absolutely do not need to do that to an oppressor, mm-hmm. Or someone that is harming you mm-hmm. and talking badly to you. But I was impressed by the grace. I was like, man, I wish I had that sometimes.
Yeah.
You know, to keep writing and. Mm-hmm. Keep egging on, and you know, Eleanor Roosevelt, you know, eventually they developed this friendly rapport.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know. I think different people have different opinions on what it means to call in, to call out, to like mm-hmm. push something, or to not push, quote unquote, too hard. Those things are really complicated and they mean different things to different people. But I mean, just in this case, like, that's what Polly decided to do. Mm. They just were like, I'm just gonna keep kind of doing this. And Eleanor Roosevelt was a powerful person. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, there's something to be said for sort of getting into that realm or whatever.
Yeah, that sphere, that influence.
Yeah, exactly.
I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess at one point, I didn't really know this, but JFK appoints Eleanor Roosevelt to the, like, a survey of women, which sounds hilariously like the binder's full of women.
Oh my God, I forgot about
and that. Ele- the throwback. Uh-huh. And Eleanor invites Polly, and I think it's there that they meet Betty Friedman and start now.
Yeah. Right, right. I remember.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they did so much. Mm-hmm. I just, like, they joined the ACLU. They were a professor at Brandeis University. And that was, I thought that part was fascinating. Because at some point, she's not seeming relevant to her students anymore.
Hmm.
What do you think of that part?
I think it's maybe inevitable.
True.
Like, yeah.
Old people.
Yeah. I think an element of that is inevitable, but I don't know. History is always relevant. Like, even if things are changing, like, that was Polly's whole point. Mm-hmm. Was like, change is good.
Yeah.
And like, it needs to happen. I don't know. Not their whole point, just like a point of their work.
Yeah. And like, I thought it was interesting that they applied for tenure. They were told that their ideas were not brilliant, which I feel like is such a terrible, like, word to use. That's so rude.
It's rude. It's also such a subjective word, and it's also so, it's like, it feels like a very specific way to undermine somebody.
Yeah.
Like, especially someone in academia. It's like a sneaky, slimy attack on this person, like a personal attack kind of.
Yeah.
But like, veiled in this, like, oh, it's not brilliant. Like, what the fuck is brilliant?
Yeah, because I mean,
that's, I'm just sure some word you made up.
Yeah, exactly. I'm sure the definition has changed since then, but I would assume it's something like novel.
I guess, but
which
I
is, mean, like, bullshit, because right. They were cited in laws that we now take for granted.
Yeah.
So they're like,
it's also a subjective term. Like, something could be brilliant to someone and not to another person. It doesn't, it's like not a criteria.
Yeah.
For tenure.
It's, like, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It's subjective. Exactly. That's a subjective word that, yeah, should not be used.
Yeah.
I thought that was fairly interesting. And I like that they were able to interview some of their students.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was pretty fun.
Yeah.
The end of the movie, I felt like, was a little rushed.
I felt that too.
Yeah, it kind of goes to like, okay, so they're teaching, they get their tenure, and then Renee dies of breast cancer. And then I guess kind of from there on, you know, they become a priest, and then it was just kind of like trying to wrap it up as fast as possible.
Yeah.
But I don't know if that's because there just wasn't a lot of content.
Could be. Yeah, it could be. Although there was so much content already.
Yeah.
From previous. So, but I don't know. Yeah, previous years is what I meant to say. It could be that maybe they ran out of funding. Like, I don't know.
Or true,
maybe,
true, true.
Maybe they were like, okay, we're going to focus on just this period because that's like maybe the most meaty period. And we don't want to make this like a 4-hour movie, even though I totally would have watched
four hours
of this. And I don't say that about a lot of things.
Exactly. Yeah, no, I totally agree. For the listeners out there, you know, like Sarah and I are heavily, I don't know if you're diagnosed or not, but I feel like I'm like ADHD. Yeah. So we're like 90 minutes sounds good.
Yeah. I think also we're busy. So when we think about like setting aside a chunk of time, that's like less than, or that's more than an hour. It's just like, oh God.
I got to watch this in one sitting and I wanted to.
Same.
You know,
we did not just so rare watching it just because like we started watching it last night. This is how I always do it. I watch it like very last minute. I do everything super last minute, everything in my life. We started watching it last night at like 10 and I was so tired that I was really interested, but I literally couldn't keep my eyes open. So I finished it this morning.
Yeah, but it is very engaging, which I really like because I think sometimes it's rare.
Yeah.
So I just thought it was really beautiful. It made me want to learn more about history, which, you know, I feel like I don't know a lot about. Like I was kind of saying before, it's hard for me to put it into like context, like what happened when and how close those events were to each other. Like I can understand the years, but in terms of like a cultural context, what that had, what that meant to the cultural context. So, you know, it made me want to learn more about them and their impact on cultural context. And so thrilled about an autobiography. I'm ready for that.
Yeah. I'm out here so ready to read their writing now. More of their writing. Since we read a little bit on the screen.
Yeah.
Got to read the whole thing, the whole book.
Yeah. Lots of.
Do they have more than one book?
I believe so.
Okay. I think so. Anyways, I'm going to go research that.
Yes, but I do not know all the content.
Because the writing that was on the screen was also like the excerpts they showed. It was not just interesting. It was like beautifully written.
Yeah.
Like very poetic. And
yeah, there was like poetry, you know, sprinkled in there too. But even their academic writing was beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I feel like definitely check out this film. It was
highly recommend,
worthwhile.
It's on Amazon Prime if you pay Bezos dollars. Bezos, I think, crypto.
If you are a Prime member, it might be free.
It is free if you're a Prime member. Yeah,
there you go, just fork it over.
We live in Bezos's world anyway. Just kidding. I don't believe
it's a
that
Bezos I'm
down
world
with,
I'm just
down with Bezos
it.
No, I hate him.
Yes,
but
fair.
But I would recommend this movie however you can get it.
Yes, it's very good. So if you have any recommendations, if you are a polymery stan, do you have
side note, when I told my girlfriend, I was like, do you want to watch this movie about Pauli Murray? She thought I said polyamory and she was like, not really. And I was like, oh, that's okay. And then she's like, oh, it's okay, I'll watch it with you. And then when we started, she was like, oh, Pauli Murray.
It is, I won't say it's an unfortunate name, but it is very similar. Easily confused.
Yeah, sorry, I completely interrupted you. You were gonna say where people can find us and get in touch with us.
Oh, it's okay. I'm just talking about other cool buzzwords like stan. So if you're a Pauli Murray stan,
which you should be,
please contact us with recommendations on what's good, Sam. And you can just generally email us at galpalswatch@gmail.com.
Yep. We technically have a Twitter account, which is galpalswatch.
and technically an Instagram account, which is also Gal Pal Swatch.
Yep.
Which is really just a Twitter. Well, it just goes to Twitter.
Oh, okay.
That's it.
You linked them. I see.
I did link them.
Yeah.
But I'm not a tweet person. So
Twitter's supposed to be my job, but I don't do it.
It's okay. This is a free gig.
It's true.
But you know, listeners, one day if you hear ads, it's all right. I'd like to make some money. It's no big deal.
Yeah. One day. Maybe one day.
Yeah.
Anyways, thanks for listening. We hope you like this movie. Tell us if you do. Talk to you later.
And keep it. Hi, welcome to Gal Pals Watch. Oh, we didn't say hi. Anyway. Welcome. There we go.